Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking online privacy, creepy social media, and cybersecurity with Carol Terrio.
Chances are you paid for something recently, or maybe you gave some money to a friend, but you likely didn't do that with physical cash, right? You probably did it via a digital payment online, or maybe with an app like Venmo or the Cash App. And this presents a whole host of issues. We know how to keep people from stealing our money right out of our wallets and out of our purses. But what about the money that we have in our accounts online? And so our guest today is Carol Terrio. Carol knows a thing or two about internet security. She founded the Sophos Naked Security site years ago, and she now co-hosts the podcast Smashing Security. She lives and breathes all things cybersecurity, and we are so glad that she's here with us today to talk about protecting our identity and ultimately protecting our money. So, Carol, thank you for joining us today on the podcast.
Oh, guys, I'm so honored to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
We're so happy to have you, Carol, and Matt and I, we always drink a craft beer on every episode. Today on the show, we're drinking a raspberry chocolate stout that we're really excited about. I know you have a beer over there as well, correct?
I do. I'm drinking the Wild Beers, accompanied Aquantic. It's a session IPA with citrus, fresh pine, and extra pale. So there you go.
you already get an A+ for participation in the show. So
thanks. I'm not a beer drinker, but I really wanted to play ball.
Taking one for the team. I appreciate
That's right.
it.
Well, the sacrifices we make.
Exactly. To create a good podcast. Well, Carol, the first question we ask anyone who comes on the show, because Matt and I do really like craft beer, and we're willing to spend a little bit more money right now on beer while we're saving well and investing for the future. What is your craft beer equivalent? What's the thing you're willing to splurge on in the here and now?
Well, unlike your entry, I do have a few extra hobbies outside cyber. Probably podcasts is probably my biggest thing that I spend my time on. But I art, right? I don't like to call myself an artist, but I try and do art every day. Like I paint, I draw, I do ink stuff, and I'm loving the whole journey to getting better. So my pleasure is art supplies, right?
Because
gorgeous stuff at the professional quality paints, watercolors, oils, you know, papers from Arches, inks, charcoals, brushes, all that stuff. I just bought this monster paintbrush, size 22, which will mean nothing to known painters, but there, you guys know what I'm talking about.
Is that as big as my hand or smaller?
No, it's probably an inch in diameter, and it's kind of like a teardrop, and it's the whole thing is just full in it. You can just really slap the paint on, and it set me back $100, which is a lot of money for one brush, right?
Yeah, it is.
It must be
a premium brush. That's the kind of brush you're going to pass down through the generations.
Unicorn hairs or something like that.
Exactly, but you know, I don't do that often, and I can I think about it for months beforehand. It sits in my inbox, and then I just go for it when I'm really sure. And I'm loving it, so it's all good.
That's great.
Yeah, when you find a deal as well. Yeah. Right? Some kind of discount. Well, Carol, let's kind of dive into this, right? Over the past couple of decades, we've seen more aspects of our lives shifting online and going digital, right? Like banking and investing. Obviously, we're huge fans of the convenience and benefits this offers, but how concerned should we be with the digital security, you know, of the apps and of the websites that we're using?
Not at all. It's just a big hoax. No, I'm kidding.
It's just
joke. No, seriously, you've got to be really, really, really concerned. And I hate to say that, right? It is really kind of a failing of the environment and technology working together. There's lots of solutions out there. There's lots of ways you can be better, but it's not easy. So it means we have to think. If you think about it, you know, when we all look for the same kind of information, right? Like a Brexit or pandemic or elections, all that stuff, we're all more vulnerable because we're looking for information. We're all looking for the same information. So it tells like bad guys to say, this is what they're looking for. Hmm. So if we can somehow dupe them into thinking we're going to give them the information they want, and we're all looking for the same thing, we're kind of like sitting like we're fish, you know, we're goldfish in a fishbowl, basically. So that's why it's important to think about security.
So in particular, right when we're searching, there are spammy results that can come up, and that can, you know, there's malware and all sorts of things that can happen if we're doing that. Let's say there's a company that we have a relationship with, right, like a bank or an investment company, an investment house, and, you know, we log into there consistently, you know, maybe once a month, maybe once a week to check our balance, to see how things are going. What are the potential risks in logging into a website with a company that we do business with on the regular? And how can we avoid some of the potential pitfalls?
Okay, so one of the ways you can avoid the pitfalls is by having bona fide apps from those providers. So let's say you bank with ABC Bank, and ABC Bank say, hey, this is our portal, this is our app, right? And banks are pretty good at security. Pretty generally across the board, you know, there's like certain regulations they need to meet. So they tend to be much more trustworthy than your typical retail shop. So my trick with those things is use apps. Now, what can happen? The things you're trying to avoid, for example, is you may get a text message. In fact, I got one on this weekend that said, hey, my Halifax, which is a bank in the UK, my Halifax account has been breached, and to call Halifax on this number immediately. Now, I don't have a Halifax account. But if I did, what would I have done, right? So what some people will do, and what we're warning people against, and what they're trying to get you to do, is to click on that number because it's so easy, right?
It's right there in your text. It'll do it for you. Yeah.
Exactly. So what in those situations, if ever you're concerned, do not click on those links. Do not click on that phone number. Go to the bona fide website or the app, find the phone number that they advertise for everyone, and call them and say that you're a customer, and then explain what happened. Because what happens is they route you in to someone who pretends to be a bank. And they say to you, hello, Mr. Can you just confirm your password and your username? And you give them all the information to verify who you are. And then guess what they do with that information? Go to your account and empty it.
Clean you out.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's talk about passwords too. You know, I'm sure you're going to tell us that strong passwords are clutch, right? Like ABC, 123, like that's not going to cut it.
Is that today's lingo, clutch? I like that. I'm going to start using that in my podcast.
You know, I think we overuse that word, maybe.
Yeah, we get called out for using that.
Really?
I don't know if it's more of a Southern kind of dial. You know, I'm not totally sure. But
it's like a millennial guy thing. I don't
know.
I like it.
I've written it down. Okay, I'm using that. Okay, yeah. So, okay. Yeah.
But when you're creating a new password, though, you know, like a lot of sites will gauge the strength of it as you're typing it out. But, you know, like how long should passwords actually be? And should we like include, in, you know, those special characters and the numbers? What's a good sort of routine that we should go through when we're creating these new passwords?
I know. Okay. Passwords are everyone, the bane of our lives, aren't they? They're the right. worst. Now, let me tell you something. So there's these great research. There's some great research into passwords. So 23 million account holders, this particular company, their passwords were 123456.
Oh my gosh.
Okay.
That's
51.
A lot of people.
Yeah. 51% of people use the same password for both work and home personal accounts, right? So they use it across all their accounts, same password, because they've developed a good one. Right? They may have a good one and they use it across all their accounts. The problem with that is if someone gets in somewhere, they can then just go around to every single popular app and try the password. Right? So rather than you just being hacked on one place, say Facebook, you're hacked across every single social media account you've got. And oh, maybe if you're using it with your bank as well, then the banks are a bit more, you know, they have a few more hurdles to get through. But ultimately, that's what criminals want, is your moolah, right? And they're going to get it by either trying to sell your data, your information, or by actually just going to your account, trying to get into it. So there's these things in my world called like targeted social engineering. And this is where someone basically dupes you, scams you, right? And the problem is like 60% of US adults have this habit of incorporating pieces of information in their password that can be found out on their social media account. So a third use a pet's name, a fifth use their own name, right?
Wow.
15% put down the name of their partner in it. Like, I slept with John last night might be someone's password, right? Right? And the thing is those are all clues to someone who's trying to get into your account. And these aren't people. This is, I think, in a lot of people's heads, you're thinking, oh, like, why would anyone target me? Well, they're not targeting you. You're just maybe in the spitfire. Like, yes, some attacks are very targeted, but they tend to go after people with the big bucks, right? Like with a lot of money or a lot of celebiness, or they have a political difference or something like that. For people, you know, the average Joe, what you're worrying about is being lazy. And the job is to just be safer than your neighbor. It sounds harsh, but that's really the way to go. So
it's like when a bear's chasing you, you just got to run faster than the other person, right?
Yeah.
Kinda like that.
I think there's some actual doctoral research on that, saying that basically you shouldn't do it because it makes you a bad person. but basically it's like if you have a house and there's a burglar on the street, he's going to case the whole street, right? And he's going to look for the one that's easiest to get into because they want to get in, get out.
So don't be easiest.
Right? So don't be easiest. You make it a little bit harder. Have a dog, have a stick, have floodlights, have locked doors. So that's the same kind of concept. You got to think about it when you're in the digital world.
So the reason I think, Carol, that so many people will use the same password across so many different platforms, and like you said, they shouldn't be doing that, is just because it is a heavy lift to remember all these different passwords. And so there are now password managers that claim to help you with that. And they will essentially, they'll do the thinking and remembering of those passwords for you. So what's your take on, you know, things like 1Password, Bitwarden, the companies that will do that for you, sometimes for a price and sometimes for free?
I'm a huge, huge fan of password managers. I do recommend them, and I'm glad you brought them up because I use LastPass. There are loads of good ones out there, and the same idea happens. So the way they work is it's basically an online diary, and you need to remember the password to get into the diary. That's the only password you as a user need to remember. And inside this diary, this vault, all your other passwords are listed and encrypted. So the way it works is if say you're on your browser and you go to a particular website, like say you went to, I don't know, Facebook, it would automatically recognize that you're on the Bonafide Facebook page and fill it in. Now that's the super cool thing about password managers is say you got duped by someone through an email and you clicked on a link and the whole page looked exactly like Facebook, but you actually weren't on the Facebook page and it just had some tiny, like maybe they put in the Facebook a zero instead of the letter O, something tiny that you wouldn't be able to see. Your password manager would see it, right? They'd go, this is not the right page. This is not where you should be. I'm not filling it in. And that's the real trick of them. So I love them. And there's lots of them that are free for home use that are recommended. You can get them to talk amongst, you know, between devices if you pay some, you know, and not a lot of money. We're not talking a ton of money. But if there was one big security thing I would say to everyone to do, it's watch your passwords. Unique, long, complicated passwords that you could not remember yourself. If someone held you at knife point and said, tell me your password, you go, I don't know. I really don't know. It's like my passwords are mostly 50 characters.
Wow.
Because I wouldn't remember that in a million years, but I've got tons of them, right? I've got probably 1,000 passwords.
But you do know the 1Password that rules them all, right?
I know the 1Password that rules them all, exactly.
Exactly. Well, so kind of on that note, right, in addition to password management software, what about antivirus software? You know, is that something that everyone should have? I feel like it's something that we saw more like, I don't know, in the 90s. Like when I think of like the basic... antivirus software, it seems dated, and I personally honestly don't know if it's something that I should be looking at or not.
Yeah, well, you know what? You're talking like an Apple user, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, I am.
So the Apple ecosystem is slightly different from the Windows versions, right? So I can understand, I don't know if I agree, but I can understand why Apple users might be more like, hey, do I really need this? And that's because Apple has a very good ecosystems of apps. Like it's the app environment within Apple is pretty safe. They vet the apps that go in there. And if there's a problem, they go after it. Right? They have this kind of reputation of doing it, and they've been doing it for over a decade. Others don't tend to have that same environment. So in sort of the Android world or the Google world, right, there's tons of different phones. All those phones have different UIs. Every single provider of apps is acts differently and all this kind of stuff. So in the, you know, in the kind of Microsoft and all those different worlds, there's lots of different software available. And in those environments where you can just download apps from the internet and slap them on your machine willy-nilly, I'm a little bit more like, yeah, you should have AV on your computer or antivirus on your computer. The reason is that's the thing that's protecting your desktop. Now, you're right. It is getting maybe less important as we move everything to the cloud. Maybe in 10 years' time, our whole lives are going to be like iPads, right? We will just have this system, and then everything we interact on is actually its own little app. And that's a different environment from a computer where you can have a desktop, you have your own data on your system, you've got things that work on the computer, and you're using the cloud. So AV on a computer, I think, is a good idea. AV on your phone, I don't know if I would do it. I don't.
Gotcha. One other thing too, you know, we talk about using Wi-Fi, like you started to talk about cell phones there, but you know, when we're using our phones, we recommend for folks often to use Wi-Fi in order to save money, right? In order to limit their data usage. Yeah. But what about public Wi-Fi? You know, like how safe is that? Is that something we want to avoid altogether, or are some networks maybe a little bit safer than others?
Yeah, you know, every answer I'm going to say is depends, right? Yeah. So I feel like I sound like a car salesman. Depends. So the way to think of Wi-Fi is it's like a middleman, right? It's the middleman that takes the question from your phone or the search you're making on your phone and delivers it to wherever you need it to be delivered to. And they're just basically batting the ball back and forth. They're the ball, the tennis ball that goes back and mm-hmm. forth. So if you're using encrypted services, so ones like I could come off the top of my head, there's like WhatsApp or Signal. These are apps that offer encryption within the app. The middleman can't see what you're doing. You're giving him the ball inside a box, right? They don't know what's inside the box. It could be anything. And they're just bringing it back and forth. But when you're using your device on something that isn't encrypted, then the Wi-Fi agent, that little, you know, sees everything. So your local coffee shop, for example, their Wi-Fi, they probably don't care and aren't looking at what you're searching for. But what if someone's in the coffee shop that sets up a fake Wi-Fi hotspot that looks super, super similar to the real hotspot? So you get in there and you go, oh, there's two of them. Maybe this one will be faster.
Yeah, right? That one says 5G. That's the one I'm going to get on.
And, you know, it may have a legit sounding name. And then, you know, you might, you know, I don't know if I would spot that. So the tricks to this, right, if this happens, is two things. You want to protect what you're worried about in that situation is protecting the data on your phone. And there's a few ways you can do that. You can use VPNs, right? The VPN on your phone, and you turn it on when you're using any Wi-Fi that you're not like, this is not mine or my mom's or my best friend's, right? You use the VPN. People don't like it because it does slow things down a little bit because it's scrambling everything up as it does the transfer. But it means what you're doing is going to be encrypted. Now, again, you got to trust the VPN guy, right? Because if you don't trust the VPN guy, they're seeing everything you're sending them. So it'll be quiet until it gets to them. But, you know, the VPN guys can see it. So this is, again, you want to go for bona fide names. If you're new to VPNs, go for the big guys. There's a lot of suspicious VPN companies out there. Let's put it that way. So gotcha. Trust your VPN provider before you decide. And the other thing.
I've heard so many more ads for VPNs lately, too, by the way, Carol.
Big like, money.
Yeah, it seems like it's like something that's proliferating as people are more concerned about their privacy online. A lot of people are really looking into the VPN thing. So yeah, is that something that more people should be considering, you think?
I mean, if you're at home a lot and you tend to just use your home Wi-Fi or trusted Wi-Fi at people's houses or at places you trust, and when you're out, you tend to use cell data, I think you probably wouldn't need it. So I wouldn't bother using a VPN at home, for example. But if ever you're in a coffee shop or an airport or in places like that when you're bored, you know, like think about the places where you're bored and you're just like, I'm just going to play on my phone for a bit, right? And I don't want to really hammer my own cell data coverage, so I'll just go on the Wi-Fi. Totally cool. Think about either using a VPN in that state, or if you're doing something that's like, if you're just streaming a movie, you know, maybe that's okay, right? Like that, the VPN might interfere with that. So that's where the problem is. It's always cost benefit with security, right? Phones and all these devices are there to make your life sexier and faster and more fun and, you know, slicker. And then on the other side, you got this thing go, oh, but be careful. So it's about like the bells and whistles and also about responsibility. Cars are really cool. Porsches are great. Lamborghinis are great, but you need a seatbelt and an airbag. So that's the way to think about it.
Okay. No, that's really helpful. All right. Well, Carol, we have a lot more questions for you.
And I want to open my beer.
Please, you haven't cracked it open yet.
Oh, yeah. No, sorry.
Open
your beer, start drinking, and we'll take a break. And then when we get back, we'll start talking about social media and how creepy it can be.
All right, we're back from the break. We're speaking with Carol about cybersecurity. And Carol, let's talk about social media. You know, we teased to it before the break. So let's talk about technology creeping me out. You know, what's the deal with being fed ads for a product or a company after mentioning it in real life? You know, like there have been times where when I know that I haven't searched for something online and where I've only talked about it in real life. And then the next time I hop on Instagram, right, there is an advertisement right there that's just waiting on me. That is the exact product, even though it's not something I would ever normally search for.
Yeah, how does that happen?
Okay, well, okay, so I don't know, but I'm with you, okay? I'm with you because I feel the same thing was happening, right? I kept seeing that. I'd be talking to someone or I would be on the phone with my brother. I would send him a link and suddenly in one of my feeds would be that thing. And you're like, how did that happen? What it turned out to be, and this is thanks to Apple's latest update. When they did a beta, they started showing what information was being transferred over from app to app. And it turned out that when you copy and paste, like say a link to put it into a text message, sometimes the apps would pick those up. Right. And so loads like New York Times, for example, did it. Reddit was doing it. Loads of like bona fide good apps were doing it. And it was just this kind of hidden thing. So they just go and hoover your whatever's in your clipboard when you open the app, for example. And people started shouting, going, oh, my God. But that's why I think it was happening. Right. Because if you're on Facebook and you're like, oh, I saw this really cool thing, I'm going to send it to my friend via whatever, another app. You're copying it, aren't you? You're copying and pasting.
Right.
And you're leaving the app and you're coming back in. So that's what I think was happening. And maybe on iPhones, it'll stop now because a lot of people pulled out because iPhone made a big, people that saw it made a big stink to Apple about it and to the apps.
That begs the question then about the requests that apps make when you do download them.
Yep.
Like they want microphone access or camera access. Yep. And so they're asking for access to all these different privileges on your phone. And how should we think about that? I mean, should we just have fewer apps, fewer more trusted apps? I mean, like, how do we decide which apps we're going to download and which ones we aren't?
Yeah, so less apps is a good thing. I think a lot of us need to do a bit of, you know, iPhone or phone hygiene, right? So there are a lot of game apps or stuff you downloaded because you were babysitting your nephew or playing with your kids or doing something, right? And it's just sitting there and you got it because it was free. Well, free apps are trying to get something out of you as well. Maybe it's information, maybe it's buy-ins inside once you've downloaded the app. So my advice on this is check your apps, right? The ones you don't use, get rid of. And I don't just mean delete them. Try and close the account before you delete it, but get it off your phone. Keep the apps you like. In the apps you like, go check the configuration options just to make sure you're comfy. They're not very complicated, right? And what I do, because I'm a big geek on this, is I check their privacy stuff. Because, for example, how much information do you put on Facebook or on your social medias? And, you know, do you care that they might just share that with any third party they deem okay? Be that anyone, right? It's not up to you who they share it with. So sometimes you want to go read these things and decide, actually, I'm going to be using it for this specific purpose, and I don't actually trust this particular company or this app with that information. So again, you got to use your nouse, right? It's the same as a car. You know, if I said, hey, I'll come pick you up, and you saw my old beater, right? With three wheels and no windshield and no seatbelts, you might go, actually, I might take the bus. Thanks. Right? So that's the kind of thing you got to do with apps. Just because they got pretty pictures, don't think they're all built the same.
Right. Yeah, I feel like so many apps are kind of guilty of this, you know, but I don't like the idea of these different tech companies gleaning and harvesting my data. I'm personally less worried about their ability to target me with, you know, customized ads. And I'm more concerned with, you know, with hackers trying to break into my accounts, you know, and say, you know, drain my savings account, like you mentioned earlier. Mm. And so how can the information that we post on social media put our money at risk?
Well, like we were talking about earlier, people tend to give lots of stuff away on social media. Pictures of their kids, maybe the front of their house. They might name the town or the street they live on. They might, all these little glimpses of information, these little tiny pieces of information can be just hoovered up and to build up a profile of who you are. And that is what right now is kind of traded amongst the ad companies, right? The Googles sell this to ad companies. They say, this is the profile of this person. So then they can target those ads at you. Now, just today, I recorded Smashing Security earlier today, and we had a guy on, Tim Huang, who's just written a book saying, actually, that bubble is crazy. they're hoovering all that information from you, but the way they're using it isn't actually working for them. It's not actually ending up in money in the pockets of the advertisers. It's ending up in the pockets of people like Google, right? So so he's kind of referring to almost like, the book is called like subprime. So it's like a big ad bubble, same as the housing bubble that existed, which would be perfect for this podcast. Ads are a crazy, crazy environment right now. The digital ads you see on websites are all digitally placed. They're not handcrafted by people that care. They're there to try and get you to click on them. And everyone's trying to get a piece of the money out of it. And not all, some of them have are malicious, right? Some of the ads might look bona fide, but actually you click on it and you're going to a site that looks exactly like the place you wanted to go, but it's actually a fake site. So you got to check your links. So don't click on ads is basically the answer. And use ad blockers. That's what I suggest. Use an ad blocker. Use an ad blocker. Just get them out of your face. Your web experience is so much nicer with an ad blocker. And they'll figure out a new way to monetize the web. Don't worry about them.
Well, as we're talking about too, like this is something that we haven't covered yet. We're talking about social media, and oftentimes, like you can log in with your Facebook account or with your Google account.
On
like hundreds of websites now. Is there anything inherently risky about logging in with, you know, that one login on like just tons of different websites that you do business with, whether it's an online retailer or whoever?
So let's say it was your Facebook account and your password was Bob the Dog is Great.
How'd you know my password, Carol?
And that password somehow got guessed by someone, because there's lots of pictures of Bob the Dog on your social media, and they find it. So then they can go around and find every other website that might be using that same entrance. So I'm not a fan of those.
It's similar to using the same password across all platforms just on your own. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm a big fan of the whole password manager. You have to trust the password manager, right? So don't go with someone you don't trust. Do your research on that. That's the most important bit. And then that is your vault, and it gives you unique places everywhere. So if someone hacks one thing, they're hacking only that one thing, which, you know, how many websites do you, most people have? At least 50 probably with logins. I mean, right. I've got thousands, but you know, I'm on the other side of the, I'm the digital sphere, right? So that's what I would advise on that.
Right. So we're talking about Facebook. Let's shift gears a little bit. What about cameras? You know, should we take our cues from Mark Zuckerberg? There's this photo of him sitting at his laptop working, and he's got some tape over his camera on his laptop. Should we be taking cues from him and kind of be doing something like that?
Do you know, when 10 years ago, maybe when they first started coming out, you know, cameras, we had to do video calls in the business world, and I would have a camera over mine all the time, that piece of tape over mine. It was actually a 3M sticky note, right? And all my colleagues who were all geekier than me laughed at me about doing that, thinking I was so paranoid. And 5 years later, they're all doing it. So I have a cover on all my phones. I actually have electrical tape on my mobile phone case because it wouldn't take my little snippety thing. I think the digital ecosystem is basically the Wild West right now, and it's full of flux. It's super exciting. Like every year we're hearing something crazy new, but it's because it's the Wild West, it's not necessarily safe out there, right? It's a little bit crazy. If you're going to go into it, you've got to just keep your nose. And everyone's addicted to it. People have got Alexas in their house and all these kind of things. Like everyone's constantly connected to the internet. And so in the same way that you would teach your kid how to cross the road, that is what we need to do when we're using these things. Even though it seems easy, there's some hidden pitfalls. You don't want to fall down, right?
All right. You mentioned smart speakers, Alexas. Like, how nervous should I be that I have one of those in my house? And usually, you know, all we're doing on it is asking Alexa to play music for us so we can have awesome dance parties. But like, should I be concerned about having that in my house and the fact that it's like listening to everything we're saying, apparently?
Well, you have it presumably on, connected all the time, and you use it occasionally, right?
Pretty much, yeah. And I mean, maybe we should unplug it when we're not using it.
Yeah, that's what I think, right? So okay. I don't have very much IoT in my house. And the reason I don't have it's not because it's not sexy. I get it. It's so sexy. Go, hey, Alexa, play Hello from Lionel Richie, right? It's like it works, right? And it's easy. You don't even have to get up. It's like the lazy man's dream.
Totally.
But all these devices are not being made by security experts. They're being made by companies that are trying to outbid their competitors and get a sale. And they're adding features and whiz bang, and if they're racing to get these things out of market, because it is a hot market, the IoT market, how many of these hundreds of different companies are actually investing the time into baking in security. That's what we call it, right? Like, so from the get-go of developing something, we want kind of like, what's the security implications of this? What's the security implications of this? Every step of the way. And right now, because it's the Wild West, that's not always happening, which is why we have those situations of like Alexa recording private conversations or private events that happen between family members, or baby monitors scaring the poo out of moms, you know, because they've been hacked, or TVs that watch you back, or you've got Roombas that actually can map your house and then load that up into the cloud, and you've got door systems that lock you out of your own house. Like, these are all the things that are happening right now that are in the press day after day. So the question you need to ask yourself is this IoT needed in my house? Will it make my life measurably better to incur the risk that I'm introducing into my environment? Right? So if Hello by Lionel Richie is what you need to hear every night, then you need an Alexa, right? And then maybe, do you need it on all the time? Right? So do you need it to be plugged in and sitting there humming constantly? Because all of these things are built by human beings. All human beings make mistakes. And you're basically putting microphones and video cameras around your house inside where you live, where you're trying, and then you're trying to protect privacy. So it's a hard environment.
Yeah, so I saw a story recently about a coffee maker that some security experts, they basically were trying to figure out, like, where are the security issues? They were able to reverse engineer it and basically make it to where, like, something like where the coffee maker could demand a ransom. Like, yeah. Did you see something about that?
Yeah. So that has kind of been blown out of proportion. So they did. Okay. They were, you know, just so you know. So it's true that there were bugs inside the software, but they would be so hard to hack. Like, you'd have to have access to the coffee maker, to the person's phone, in order to make that hack that this researcher found work, right? So that's one of the things where we're useful. People like us, like Smashing Security and stuff, are useful, because we'll be able to say, look, I know you heard about that in the mainstream press because everyone got excited, right? But that's not what we need to worry about. What the real things we need to worry about are, because some of them are exciting. You know, journalists get bored too. Remember that, right? Journalists get bored and they like nice, sexy titles. And hacked coffee machine, who doesn't want to read that?
I mean, I clicked it, so.
Right. But it is true that IoT is often more easily hacked than not. And again, it will get better. But right now, you're kind of a trailblazer if you're bringing this stuff in your house. Even though people will say, oh my God, I've already got version 3. You're still, in the big grand scheme of things, a trailblazer in bringing these things into your house. So do your due diligence, check your privacies. You know, you're paying for this, right? Remember that. Sure. You're paying for these pieces of kit. So if the privacy says, oh, we're going to share your data with everybody and it's totally cool and we're going to track you everywhere you go, is that okay with you?
Sounds like being a Luddite is better for our security and better for our wallets too, right?
Mm, there you go. I'm certainly still one. I'm clinging to my wooden desk desperately.
All right. Well, Carol, we've got a couple more questions for you, including kind of cybersecurity and the upcoming presidential election. So we'll get to a couple of those questions with you right after this break.
Back from the break, talking with Carol. And Carol, you're a Canadian living in the UK. So I'm not sure if you've heard, but here in the US, we're actually in the middle of an election.
Are you?
Yeah.
It's been really civil and fun. Yeah.
Oh, it's looked so fun. Really. I've really been so jealous of all of you.
all the normal times that we're having over here.
Exactly.
Right?
I know.
However, you know, are there individual security concerns surrounding the presidential election? I would like to hear. Just some of the stories that you've been researching in regards to that.
Well, this is a perfect kind of almost like a segue to what we were talking about at the beginning, right? So we're in the era right now of fake news and misinformation, right? So, and we know that this is happening. Everyone is telling us it's happening. And lots of parties are trying to convince us and change our ideologies to, you know, to really strengthen our views in certain ways. And it's about us to be able to read what, you know, carefully what we're sending before we send it on. So that's the biggest thing on that front. That's how you can help. Don't send stuff because the title was nice, right? Check it out first and make sure you want to send it to people. So we have this election going on. And remember at the beginning of this, we were talking about how everyone is focused on the same thing. Well, guess what? You guys are like little goldfish in a fishbowl for hackers, because all of you care about the elections, no matter what side anyone's on. Mm-hmm. You care about the outcome. You care about it in your state. You care about it in your cities. You care about it in your country. And so you may be looking for information online to try and maybe check out an opinion, validate your own opinions. And people know that. And they're going to try and lead you down routes that you don't necessarily want to go down by pretending to be a news article about exactly what you want to read about. And inside that news article might be a, hey, get this free, ebook all about this. And that might be malicious. So again, you have to keep your wits about you. The other way they get through to you, so the big things you want to watch out for is electoral ads. So don't click on the ads. Watch out for emails in your system, like especially if it comes like say from your Auntie Hilda and it says, oh my God, news about the elections, you've got to read this. And you think, Auntie Hilda hasn't written to me in 6 months. What? Okay. She may have been hacked. Right. And so the name of the person that has emailed you is not the sole way you should validate an email's to be good. Okay. You have to look at if it doesn't feel right, trust it. Now, what's good is lots of email. If you guys have been keeping up to date with all your security patches, you know how your computers will say, oh, you have an update waiting, right? Don't delay on those things, right? Update right away. That's really important. Those are like newfound vulnerabilities that hackers are going after because they're trying to race you from updating it to try and get that hole. So always do your updates. Click on emails and links in emails. Go to the website. So if you read something that sounds really interesting, then go to the web and go search for that thing. Don't click on the link from it. And watch your emails, because that is where it's going to happen. You may get a government or a local election information that the place is closed, for example, and you might panic, and that's what they want you to do. They want you to panic and click. When you feel that panic rise, just take a breath, calm down and read it again, and then decide what you want to do. And if you don't know what to do, don't do anything. Call someone who knows more about it, right? Just stop.
Right. Yeah. Basically, it sounds like they see an opportunity, sort of like you were saying before.
Totally.
Like, this is what people are talking about. This is on people's minds. And because of that, they're looking to exploit that emotion, take advantage of people looking for more of that information that's out there. They're pouncing on that opportunity.
And think about it. There's a lot of people right now out of work. Right. There's a lot of people facing out of work, and there's a lot of people that are going to be facing a lot of difficult decisions and difficult bills. You know, no one wants to be scammed. No one wants to be hacked. So just be very wary of people need to make money, and this is a great way. This is attracting more and more people. So this is not just Russian organized criminals that are doing these kind of things. Right. It's also people that could live down the street from you. And because they know a bit about computers and they're in a tight way. Right. They need some cash. So what you want to watch out for these things, because ransomware is another thing you want to worry about. Right. So these are the downsides to all these things. If you actually click on the phishing emails, is like suddenly all your content on your computer is locked and you can't get access to it unless you give them a grant. Right. And that can be a very difficult situation, because do you want to pay the bad guy for your information? Or do you want it to be splashed all over the internet? So there are difficult things, right? And we use these computers, and often we try and be like ostriches. We just close our eyes and think, oh, it won't happen to me, it won't happen to me, it happened to me. But literally, and this is where the silver lining to all this, if you use a password manager, you have different passwords for every single website that you use, and you use that manager to manage that. You employ, if where you can, you know, multi-factor authentication or two-factor authentication, that's when they send you an SMS code or they send you an authenticator on your phone. Those things are really good. It's like a second kind of hurdle to make sure you are you. And it makes it that much harder for bad guys. They get over the first hurdle, it's very rare they get over the second one.
Speaking about not letting our information get in other people's hands, get splashed all over the internet, sometimes on the show, Matt and I, we talk about ways to make some quick money by decluttering, getting rid of any like valuables laying around the house. Oftentimes, those are old computers that you have or old cell phones. And some of your personal information is on there. So before you're selling a phone or a laptop or a personal computer, like what should you do? What steps should you take to know that somebody's not going to have access to your personal information once it's in their possession.
I think put it in a blender.
Is that okay. The only true way?
Well, in the old days, right, you used to be able to use a magnet and it would just wipe all the information off the phone, like off the tapes, right?
But now scramble we use it like in Knives Out,
or
did it to the videotape, right?
Yeah, but now it's all flash drive, so like magnets don't work. Okay, so what do you do? The first thing you want to do is you want to first get your new device up and running. Okay, you do not wipe your phone before your new device is up and running, please.
Right.
Two, then wipe your device and you want to do a factory default reset. And my advice, don't do it just once. Do it 3 or 4 times because that's rewriting the information. And it's kind of like a cake layer. So imagine I had $1,000 at the bottom of a cake and then I just put icing in a cake layer, another icing cake layer, another icing and cake layer. You might not get there if you're eating your way through to get to it. So that's the same idea as wiping a phone. Each layer is something more difficult for someone to get to.
Okay.
Decouple your phone from all the systems it's connected to. So if you're an Apple gal like me, your laptop is connected to your desktop, is connected to your iPad or to your phone or whatever, right? So before you want to make sure that's all disconnected from your systems as well. You don't want to have any trace of you still connecting to anything. And make sure, make sure your new device is running very smoothly before you start this process. For example, if you're using multi-factor authentication where someone sends you a code to your phone rather than an SMS and it doesn't recognize the phone, you don't get the code.
Right.
So you want to make sure that all the really important services, your banks, your passwords, your security stuff knows that this new device is the new device that you want to use to do your business.
Yeah, that could be a huge pain in the butt, right?
Oh, yes.
Get your new device up and running. You feel like things are good to go. You've wiped your old one, sold it maybe already on eBay, and then you can't log into, you're not receiving the code to be able to log into your savings account or your checking account.
Sure.
I could see.
On the iPhone, at least, I know there's two different types of restores. So, for example, on my old iPhone, the screen kept being really dark. You know, even when it was full brightness, it was still dark. So I had to do a factory reset, but I was able to do what they call a soft factory reset, where it reset the OS, the operating system of the phone, but didn't change any of my information. So I still was logged into all my apps that I had. Where you want to do a full factory reset, right? So you want to go check that. You want to make sure the apps have been removed from your phone, that you can't open. They're not even present, right? It's like a completely new phone.
Right,
and you want to
do
that 3 or 4 times and make sure and go in and say, I can't see anything of me here.
Yeah. So on that note, you're talking about taking care of your mobile device. Like, I've heard that it's a good idea to reboot your cell phone every morning when you get up. Is that true?
I don't know. I have not heard that.
Never heard of that? Okay.
I'm not saying it's not a good idea. I mean, I'm very bad with that, though. I tend to leave things running a lot. Like, even sometimes I'm like, oh, my computer, I tend to leave it on standby. Off Wi-Fi, but I leave it on standby,
Same here.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so whatever, like a few other best practices then that we could easily implement, on our phones or on our computers that would go like a really long way when it comes to cybersecurity. You already mentioned the password managers. That definitely seems like one that you've come to multiple times here, so I'm going to say that that's probably the first thing that you'd recommend. But what are a few other things that we should all do?
The low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, I would go around your house and have a list of all the smart devices that you have in your house, right? So list them out and list out what the version numbers are of that. I know it sounds ridiculous, but you will be shocked at how many devices you have in your house that have microphones and cameras and GPS functionality. You will be shocked. I bet it's around 10 or 20 for most of your listeners, okay, which will blow your mind. So all those things you got to think about, are they up to date? Have I been looking after them? So if you've got like really old, do you have old equipment that you haven't updated, old computers that are still connected that haven't been updated in ages? They're a problem. Okay, just because you don't use it and it's still on, that's a problem. So you want to get that off your kind of home network, if you will. You want to get it off your system. You want it out of your house. You don't want those kind of things.
Because basically, as those things are laying around, they're vulnerabilities, right?
Exactly.
They're not getting updated the same way.
Yeah, exactly.
And if they're on, exactly, right? So there's a so this is where it's really hard because people are like, well, it works fine. Why should I change it? I don't want to update it. Every time I update it, it doesn't work very well, right? And so I can understand that. But this is, again, where I'm kind of preaching to a simpler life. Like, I understand technology is really integral to our lives, but maybe not as much as we all think. And maybe we just need to think about what technologies we really want in our homes where we have our families and all the private moments we have.
I think that's a great point and an incredible note to wrap up on. Carol, this has been a great conversation. I've learned so much personally. So thank you so much for taking the time to join us. And where can our listeners find out more about you and what you're up to?
You can find me at Smashing Security. This is a podcast I do every week. And there's another podcast I've just launched, which is called Sticky Pickles. And you can find me there. it's a little bit rude, so it's for the adulter audience.
Okay. Good to know.
do you want to give like a brief synopsis or a brief summary of what that show is about?
Because that's an interesting
name. Sticky Pickle. That's not something you hear every day.
Yeah. So Sticky Pickles is all about being knee deep in a dilemma, right? We've all been there. What do you do now? So I have a co-host, the gorgeous Anna Brading, who I do it with, and I try and present her with a sticky pickle, a dilemma that I think she wouldn't be able to get herself out of. It's just too sticky, too cringy, too awful. And then she has to try and get herself out of it without losing face.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah, so cringy, the same to me.
These are social situations, I guess.
Yes, they're social
situations. This isn't technology related.
No, not at all. Thank God. Okay. You see, another breath of fresh air. Yeah, no, that's all about relationships. I meet with a boss, mother-in-law, boyfriend. So we go across the spectrum. Really fun to do. It's been a pandemic special.
That's great. We will be sure to link to both of those in our show notes. And Carol, we really appreciate it. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us today.
It was an absolute pleasure, guys. And thank you for teaching me the word clutch.
Carol, you are welcome. Joel, I hope that's not a term that we overuse.
I feel it might be one of those words I go to too often.
I tend to do it as well. But what a great interview, though, that we just had here with Carol. I feel like this is the perfect topic to bring somebody on for, right? It's something where it's related to our money, but it's not so on the nose. And it's not something that we are too terribly familiar with, but it is so important. We talk through all the many different ways that we need to make sure that we're being smart, with the devices that we're using, with our different accounts, with our passwords. So yeah, for you, man, what was your big takeaway? What's the one thing that you're going to start doing now in order to make sure that you're being smarter and safer online?
All right. Well, I learned a lot, and there are probably a few changes I'll make, but I think that the biggest thing that stuck out to me, the biggest takeaway I had was, will a smart device, will it make your life measurably better? That's what Carol said. And she said, if not, skip it or take it out of your home if it's not making a big difference in your life. And so for us, we do have a couple of Alexa speakers, and the girls love to play Frozen 2 or whatever it is they want to listen to on the device. And I like at night just to be able to yell at my speaker and tell it to play me whatever I want to listen to not have to get up, because it is kind of for the lazy man like myself.
That's what she said. The lazy man's dream. You don't even have to get up.
It works. It's
or
true.
Or even swipe or type with your thumb.
Yeah. But you know what? Maybe during certain parts of the day, I'll turn it completely off. I'll unplug the device so that it's not listening to me, because that's the problem with those smart devices. And I'm not one of those people that has a lot of connected Internet of Things stuff going on in my house, but I'm going to take another look. What is it that I do have here? And what can I get rid of that isn't making a big difference, that I don't need, that could potentially be a problem in my life, leading to someone knowing more about me than they need to know? So I think that's my big takeaway from this conversation. Matt, what's yours?
Yeah, I think I've got a couple takeaways here, but they all have
it's
to
called the big takeaway. Yet you choose multiples.
They both have to do with your cell phone, though. How about that?
All right.
She mentioned how going with the bona fide apps for a specific banking institutions, how that's just a slam dunk way to make sure that your data is encrypted. She's talking about how there's basically a higher standard that those companies have to adhere to, and it makes sense, right? When you have thousands and hundreds of thousands of individuals' dollars, maybe in a specific account, you need to make sure that it's difficult for folks to get into those accounts. So that was encouraging to hear. And the other thing has to do with saving money. I often will jump on Wi-Fi no matter where I am in order to keep my data usage low, even when I'm not necessarily aware as to who is running that Wi-Fi network, right? And so I was encouraged maybe to not do that, if I didn't know who is running that network. But then also, if I do decide...
It's kind of like a frugal or cheap thing, right?
Yeah. Seriously.
$5 in data usage that you're going to spend might be worth it compared to someone getting access to your information.
Right, but if you are going to be frugal or maybe borderline cheap, to consider some of those virtual private network systems, the VPN. If you are going to be on someone else's Wi-Fi and you're not totally sure of the security there, that is when a VPN makes sense. It's not something that you need to be concerned about when you're on your own Wi-Fi, but when you're out and about, those are the kind of situations where a VPN might make sense for you. So if you're on the road more, if you travel a lot, a VPN might be something that you need to look into. But, you know, if you're more of a homebody like me and only rarely make it out to the outside world where you're going to hop on someone else's Wi-Fi, that's not something that I need to worry about.
Well, I hear too that if you have a VPN, you can watch like Netflix content in Canada or Scandinavia or whatever. Like,
oh, really?
Because it doesn't know where you're at location-wise.
Oh.
And so you have access to some of the streaming content from Netflix around the world.
Oh, cool.
Which, you know, they've got different contracts negotiated with different providers in every single country. And so, yeah, what's available in India is different than what's available in the United States. That's
a nice little perk.
Something I heard on the street, but yeah. All right. So Matt, let's go back to the beer that we had on the show today while we were chatting with Carol. She had a beer herself, but the beer that we had is called Duh Snake Blood by Dissolver Brewing. This is a beer you picked up for us recently, and it's a raspberry chocolate imperial stout. So yeah, what was your take on this beer, man?
Yeah, this is one of the breweries that Kate and I poked our head into and got a couple beers while we were there visiting. This was, like you said, a raspberry chocolate imperial stout that has raspberry, vanilla, French broad, cocoa nibs, and husks. I'm not totally sure what husks are, like corn husks?
I don't know, man. That's weird.
But this was a really tasty stout. This is one that's perfect for, you know, these cooling temperatures. I love having beers that fit with the season. But man, I will say this particular beer, I gave your cup the first pour, like the first half of the beer, and I got the second half. I'll be honest, it got a little thick there towards the bottom of my glass. I don't know if that's a quality control issue per se, or if that's just how they want. Maybe that's the husks, actually.
It could be. Well, I just looked it up. Cocoa husks are the outer shell of the cocoa bean, and like the bean, they're also edible. So yeah,
there's
two different parts of the cocoa bean that were used in the making of this beer. But interestingly enough, I agree. Like this beer probably should have been filtered, and it's okay when some beers are unfiltered. In fact, I like many of my beers, in particular IPAs, unfiltered.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like there's more flavor sometimes. But when you're using bigger ingredients like that, maybe a more intense filtering process is helpful. I really like the beer. I like the flavors, like dark chocolate and raspberry. But at the same time, the mouthfeel was a little bit off just because of the lack of filtering, I think.
A little too thick, a little too chunky in my mouth, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I will say, man, of course, I got this beer for you, right? It's a big old stout, but it's got raspberry in it.
That's too kind of me. I appreciate that.
I try to be thoughtful where I can.
Yeah, well, it was a fun one. I'm glad we got to have this one together. And I can see why they called it Snake Blood, because Snake Blood would be like dark with like a hint of raspberry color, I would think, right?
I would agree.
That's what I'm guessing. I haven't ever killed a snake, but that's my assumption.
Or enjoyed his blood.
Right, exactly.
It's so gross.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. For folks who want the show notes, including links to some of the things that Carol mentioned in our conversation, we'll have those available for you at howtomoney.com.
Yeah. And if you listened to this episode and you found it helpful and enjoyable, we would ask for you to leave us a review over at Apple Podcasts. And if you've already done that, we would ask for you to tell a friend or a family member about the show. That helps us to get the word out, and it helps them to start doing smarter things with their money as well. So Joel, that's going to be it, buddy. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.